Hello, and welcome to the Chartered Banking Institute podcast series on leadership. My name is Joanne Murphy, and I'm Chief Operating Officer at the Chartered Banker Institute. Today, we launched a mini podcast series in partnership with Men for Inclusion, and I'm delighted to be joined by Gary Ford and Mark Reed, co-founders of Men for Inclusion. Our mini series will have three parts, which will focus on inclusive leadership. With an added dimension, we also have some anonymous questions sent in by Chartered Banker Institute members. International Women's Day had a theme this year called Inspire for Inclusion. Today, we want to move beyond the what and move into how we create inclusive workspaces and the benefits of doing so. It isn't an easy thing to do though. So today's podcast will be looking at feeling comfortable with being uncomfortable. So Gary, welcome, and I'd like to start with you. Can you tell me more about what it means to feel comfortable with being uncomfortable?
It's a great question, Jo, and I think part of the kind of challenge I think we all have with this subject is that we often find ourselves in situations where there's no right or wrong answer. It can be a very nuanced kind of area, and sometimes that means that, you know, people are, I mean, we're going to find this with the anonymous questions we get. People are asking questions where there isn't an obvious answer, there isn't an easy answer. And we actually can find, you know, certainly across genders and other personal characteristics, people with very, very different views on the subject. And we think one of the important things to do when you find that is actually you need to be brave enough to actually find, you know, get in the room and start having these conversations. And it is quite uncomfortable. I mean, as a man, when I first started doing this in a room with 50 women and when I was the only man, that was a really uncomfortable thing. And I think by doing it more and doing it more frequently, I think it just gets that little bit easier. And I think you get a little bit more comfortable with it. And the interesting thing is, I think you really learn from that. So I do think this subject, whether it's about gender, which obviously with International Women's Day is very high on the current kind of agenda, if you like, but also with race or with disability or with neurodiversity, all of these subjects are things that I think people sometimes find it quite difficult to talk about. But I think if they want to learn and they want to understand it and actually they want to find out more about the lived experiences with people with those characteristics, then I think sometimes it is about getting a little bit more comfortable with, you know, having conversations, asking awkward questions and being asked awkward questions back. And I think the more you do it, the easier it becomes. And as I said right at the start, it's challenging because often there isn't a right or wrong answer. And you have to listen to the various different perspectives on it.
I suppose it's very much like when you're learning something new and you're out your comfort zone.
Very much so.
Learning piece, isn't it? Just maybe building on one of your points, Mark, welcome.
Hi, Joe.
I'd like to come to you just to pick up on something Gary said there about getting more men in the room. So how do we make that happen? What sort of approaches and how would you recommend we went about that?
Yeah, I think we need to just ask ourselves, take a step back for a minute and ask ourselves, well, why aren't there more men in the room? Where have we been on this journey? I think, and maybe this might make people feel a little bit uncomfortable going back to the previous question, but I think we've spent, you know, the last 10 years or so focusing on, can I call it fixing the women? And can I call it blaming the men? And when you look at the stats, that's not got us very far. The one place that it has got us, that men aren't in the room, then they're not there. And they're not there maybe because, first of all, we weren't invited into the room when we were talking about diversity, because we didn't tick a box. And then maybe we were called biased in an unconscious way, aggressive in a micro way. And then, potentially privileged, which is a word that we'd all debate, because I'm not privileged. And maybe some of the language we use has alienated a lot of men and not encouraged them to be in the room. And then we invent this word called ally, and suggest that men should suddenly become allies. And one, we don't really define what that is or what we want from men, or it is just, yeah, you're there and you need to support women. And I think that's taken us down a path where, you know, increasingly the research is showing, you know, 20% of men are now resisting DE&I initiatives. And we need to think about it as all of us, and we need to make sure that we have some compelling reasons and understands men's motivations for being in the room.
And I suppose we're seeing physically and virtually in the room there as well.
Yeah, so absolutely. Yeah.
Mind, yeah. And soul in the room at the same time. And I was interested in that comment about the ally piece, about that, because if you're not an ally, what then are you?
Yeah.
What does that? So that's even aggressive in itself in some ways.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, many people, I think you talk about this sometimes, you know, ally sums up actually as combative. For me, I have this sort of, you know, man putting on the shining armor, jumping on the white stallion and going to save the poor maiden. And that's not what we want either. You know, surely, you know, we can come up with better words and better terms and really think about, okay, what's the motivation for men?
Yeah, no, that absolutely, that makes sense. So if we move on to sort of motivation then, Gary, if I come back to you, then how do we persuade men that there is actually something more to DE&I that doesn't mean that they're to blame and they've got a problem to fix? So what's a more compelling reason for men to get involved?
Yeah, I mean, Joe, we usually talk about this, and hey, you know, I think, you know, we don't have the exhaustive answers, to be fair, but we usually talk about this in maybe four dimensions. And the first and the most obvious one is we think, you know, there's a part of this that helps people get better at their job. I mean, a really simple thing, right? We think by developing some of the skills I talked about, around listening skills, around, you know, how you engage with people, build relationships with them. I think there's a personal development kind of lens to this. And I'm convinced, you know, when I was kind of running large scale IT programs, I was convinced that by, you know, being part of these type of conversations, I was actually educating myself, and it made me kind of do better at those type of jobs too, right? So I certainly think there's a personal development option. And I also think if you have aspirations for leadership, which also I think should entail being good at building consensus and building relationships with people, I think these type of conversations are super helpful with that. And also, you end up building a far more extensive network. If you start going out in your company and joining, you know, I'm sure most companies have a variety of ways in which you can engage with, you know, groups which don't typically have the same personal characteristics as you. You kind of, you know, you can learn from those people as well. And kind of, again, you never know whether that opens up more opportunities. There's a second area which we think is around the connection to health and well-being. There's lots of research that shows, you know, diverse and inclusive teams are happier. They have better health outcomes. People are more likely to ask for help when they're struggling. You see less absenteeism. People are more proactive about their health. And we know that particularly for men, certainly in the UK, mental health is a bit of a challenge. You know, there's lots of research showing that can be an issue. There's a third item, and, you know, I think, which is around the kind of flexibility and the opportunity. I mean, a lot of kind of flexible opportunities in the workplace have come from people driving that from a gender or from an ethnicity or a disability lens. So I think the access to, you know, parental leave, more flexible working options, have largely been driven kind of out of those traditionally underrepresented communities. And I think we as men, we've benefited from that. We can now take advantage of those things. And I think very few men, I'd like to think, would you know, give up some of that flexibility they've got. And certainly, obviously, that accelerated very rapidly through COVID. And then the final thing is this, and kind of linked to the last point, is this idea of perhaps they have a you have a responsibility. You know, the chances are that you as a man have maybe benefited somewhat by the fact you're a man in your workplace at some point in the past, right? And therefore, you know, the way things in the, you know, historically have been designed may have led to benefits to you. And maybe there's an opportunity now for you to maybe give something back and kind of help pull a few others, you know, up the ladder alongside you. And also particularly, I think if you know, once you start thinking about this in terms of your family, your daughters, your wives, even your mothers, I think you can find a reason to say, actually, you know, I want a good opportunity for them too, and I want a good workplace for them to work in too. So we think all of those things, you know, it doesn't, you know, one single reason won't work for every single person, but we think there's something there for everyone that if you think about it, actually this is quite a good thing for you to be doing too.
Yeah, so lots of benefits for your own personal development, for your own leadership style, everything that you do, you know, to get involved. Lots of good positive reasons for individuals to be involved. I suppose, like, just moving on from that, if I come back to you, Mark, so, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. Why are you still motivated? Why do you still want to get involved in this?
I think today, and actually my personal motivations are quite relatable to a lot of other men as well. You know, I identify with a lot of diverse characteristics myself. I'm dyslexic, so I failed miserably at school. And I know what it feels like to therefore be left out, to struggle in certain aspects of my life. I'm from a working class background. So, you know, I might today look and act and think like a middle-class white man, but actually, you know, through a lot of my working life and career, I haven't been able to bring my true self to work. And I've had to hide a lot of things about myself. But also, you know, my loved ones around me, you know, I've seen, you know, even my mother, my sister, my wife, my daughter, I've seen the barriers that have been put up in front of them in their lives and their careers. And I kind of think that's not fair. I would like to think that, particularly for my daughter, that I'm creating a better world for her to come into. But also in doing that, for other people around. I really think and understand that this isn't a zero-sum game for men. You know, Gary talked about some of the things there, you know, mental health, opportunity and choice. There's so much opportunity and choice that young men have got today that I didn't have in my lifetime that I want for my sons. Yeah, I want the opportunity for them to take paternity leave if they want to. I want the opportunity that they've got and the choice that they've got to be the type of person that they want to be that I didn't have because I was complying with outdated male stereotypes. So I think there's huge amounts in this for men. And one of the problems, I think, of not getting enough men in the room is we only ask them to come in because there's a business case. If we can relate it to a personal case, we'll get more men in the room.
I think that was, you know, that point you made about, like, not being able to bring your true self to workplace. And I know that you had a successful career in banking as well.
Yeah.
But not being able to bring your true self to work and how stressful actually that must have been. So it really is like, you know, having an inclusive workplace, it is about making people feel psychologically safe. That is one of the biggest benefits, that you can be your real self, as much as there's a fear that is your real self going to offend somebody or do something wrong or any of that. And that's the whole thing, isn't it, that we're talking about today, about, well, bring your real self. What does that actually mean?
And Joe, I you know, I met my wife when I was working at Credit Suisse, and she worked there as well. So we worked quite closely together. But you know, she didn't fall in love with the work persona, Mark. You know, she fell in love with that persona that I left at the revolving door as I went into the office. You know, I think we're much happier and better if we can be ourselves. And not be constrained by stereotypes and you know, old-fashioned cultures and old-fashioned ways of doing things.
Yeah, I think the well-being perspective on it is just so compelling, isn't it? For everyone, you know, for what everybody gets out of it, definitely. Gary, if I can come back to you, because you have done a lot of work around accidental sexism, which is an interesting term. Can you tell me a wee bit more about that and give me some examples about what that actually means?
It's this idea that, you know, because of the way in which we're brought up in to think in very deeply gendered ways, and we really can't help that, we continuously make mistakes because of our assumptions about the different genders. And it's kind of not unlike unconscious bias in a way, but I kind of always felt that unconscious bias was a little bit unhelpful as a term. And I always felt leaving an unconscious bias training course, I didn't really know what to do about that. And we think just maybe switching the language a little bit and referring to it as accidental sexism, it's kind of bringing into this idea that actually we are all human, we all make mistakes. And these things are quite accidental because I think people are quite well-intentioned most of the time in their kind of workplace lives. They're trying to do the right thing, but because of this kind of deeply gendered thinking, you know, mistakes get in the way. And I also think, you know, one of the things we need to do if we're trying to create a different, more inclusive culture, I think we have to recognize, assuming good intent, that, you know, people will make mistakes. And obviously we will, you know, challenge people on it and let them know they've made a mistake, but it doesn't have to become completely career limiting, you know, if we recognize that kind of good intent. So a couple of examples, you know, we often think of female skills being very kind of focused on, you know, a level of, you know, great attention to detail, being super conscientious. Clearly true of some women, clearly not true of all women, clearly true of some men too. But unfortunately, in the workplace, it leads to us more likely giving the admin tasks to women. In fact, worse still, women will often more naturally volunteer for those admin tasks. And the problem with that is that they end up spending time in less critical career kind of stretching kind of activities if we're doing that all the time. And where therefore, women are kind of sidelined into doing less valuable work and less likely to be kind of, you know, given the opportunity to do client facing or revenue generating work. In contrast, because we often think of male skills being more strongly associated with leadership, again, rightly or wrongly, one of the other things we tend to see is men being promoted on leadership potential, whereas women are much more likely to be promoted based around their past career success, much less likely promoted on career on potential kind of leadership capabilities. So because we have those deeply gendered views, it just means that these mistakes just creep into the way things happen. And we all do it. Women make these mistakes as much as men do, and men are impacted by it too. It just shows, our research shows that it just impacts women far more than it impacts the men. And therefore, it's another of the kind of reasons we believe why, you know, women's path to kind of, you know, senior leadership has few more obstacles than their male counterparts.
So, and you know, when you were talking there, it was just like it was the whole gender stereotypes was coming in there, or just like
absolutely.
And actually that natural bias that I've spoken about before, that we're all we all have it in us. You know, we're born, we're all biased in different ways, but and that also comes through in the workplace.
Sorry, Joe, you go.
No. I was just going to say, so you know, it's interesting to hear that perspective on it.
Yeah, actually, one of the accidental sections is interrupting, which I nearly did. Women get interrupted more than men, so I'm kind of living and breathing evidence that we still all make mistakes, and I apologize.
Well, I do that too, so I wouldn't worry. I suppose it is true that we've all got these traits, and we've all got a different lived experience. And as you said, you know, and you know, stereotypes happen to men just as much as they happen to women. But as you say, it's just that they do create more barriers to women and their career success than they do for others, and it's recognizing that.
Yeah, and we've got the data that shows that. And we typically see a kind of 20 to 30% kind of, you know, more likely to happen to women than men. And actually, they're all quite simple. There are things we can easily disrupt, we think, as well. Once you kind of realize these things are playing out, actually, you can be quite proactive to begin to avoid them. And that's more for maybe one of the later sessions.
Yeah, definitely. I love the whole TNT. Like tiny noticeable things that make a big impact. So yes, yeah, so I'll look forward to discussing that in a future episode. But I suppose building on that, you know, there is this right now, we, you know, even in the news currently, there's lots of things about woke culture and have things gone too far. Mark, you touched on the McKinsey recent research, I think, that was shown that, you know, 20% of men are actually resisting D&I strategies now. Why do you think that is? And what do you say to those that are feeling that things have gone too far and it's all got a bit woke these days?
Yeah, I think we need to split that down a little bit. And I think, you know, those are the leading our financial services organizations. It's not surprising that they're thinking we're not getting very far here. Yeah. What do we do? It's impossible. And I think that there are a number of good reasons for them feeling that way. Is because actually we haven't got very far when you look at gender pay gap stats, etc. You know, we may have solved and got some more women at very senior levels, but the middle part is still, you know, pretty much unchanged. But to those executives at very senior level, this isn't going away. You know, the FCA are doing a consultation paper, the government are onto it, shareholders are onto it. We have to find a new way to start making progress here. I think as well, I think you said called this sort of diversity fatigue. I think as well, we've got to, if we're talking gender diversity, we can't stop counting the women. If you like, we've got to have a measure of diversity. But I think it's also really important that we start measuring inclusivity. Yeah, because if an organization is not inclusive, then the women in the organization and those others from underrepresented groups are just not going to progress. They're going to underperform and they're not going to be retained, which is part of the problem. But also, if we haven't got an inclusive organization, we're turning our back on the core benefits of DE&I to a business. That's to the senior leaders. I think there's a whole group of men who I believe are in a passive camp. Yeah, they're there and they are our potential. Yeah, we need to get them away from being passive and becoming active. And we've talked already about some of the ways that we can do that. But it is about including them in the conversation and putting our, you know, and embracing them. Let's embrace equality. Let's inspire inclusion, one of the International Women's Day themes. But also, as you say, I think we need to recognize that if people, and we see it in the news, all over the news, if people are feeling left out, yeah, if people are feeling underrepresented, then they rise up and they look for role models who seem to represent them. And that's why we've got the people like Andrew Tate. Yeah. And an increasing number of young men are turning in that direction. We need to really strongly recognize and give those people some hope. And we need to help them to understand that this isn't against them, it's for them. That this is beneficial to them. And if they don't like this journey, you know, what's the journey they're on and where do they want to turn the clock back to? Because I think this is positive. It's positive change. I hope that answers some of your questions. I could go on for ages here, as you can tell.
Yeah, good job. We've got a series of these. Because there's so many directions they could go in. Even talking about that whole piece about, you know, the core benefits of inclusion. If we think, if we exclude 50% of the audience, or we exclude, you know, people for different traits, whether it's disability or anything along those lines, then we're excluding our target market when it comes to designing products and services. And we probably will come to that and later in the series anyway, but I mean, that's a key business benefit and a key driver for a sustainable organization, is to create products and services that are suitable for your target market. And actually, if the target market's really one-sided, then, you know, that's not going to suit the future. It's not going to make a sustainable organization longer term either. So there is like a compelling business reasons, and I know that we'll probably cover that off in our sort of next the next couple of episodes that we have. But if I come back to that sort of point, so just building on Mark's point, Gary, so Mark was, you know, talking about people that feel excluded from the conversation. There's also those that probably feel, you know, who feel that they're maybe just ignoring it, you know. So actually, it's not that they're excluded, but they just want to ignore it. They don't disagree with the concept. They understand the business rationale for doing it, but actually, they're probably a wee bit scared about getting involved. So back to that point Mark made about bringing your real self to work, is that, you know, they're frightened of doing the wrong thing, saying the wrong thing, or they just really don't know how to help. How do we sort of reach out to those people?
Yeah, and I think it's not an unnatural fear in a lot of ways. And it goes back to, you know, almost where we started, the kind of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable. But I think we have to give them, we certainly have to invite them in, and try and make it, you know, initially a safe as kind of conversation as we can make it. And I think one of the ways in which we do that is to maybe, you know, for those of us that are, you know, trying to lead these type of efforts, is maybe just to, you know, make it clear that we're vulnerable too. I think we had to show some vulnerability is actually a kind of an interesting emerging leadership trait, because I think people do actually warm to that. It's quite an authentic kind of natural human reaction. So one of the things I think you could do is actually say, look, you know, say to these other people, look, I still get things wrong. You know, I want to do the right thing, but we all make mistakes, and you know, and I'll give you permission. If I make a mistake, yeah, let me know, you know, call me out, because I want that feedback. So I think trying to make it, you know, you don't want to kind of repeat endlessly the same mistakes, but making it kind of okay to just come to the conversation. You make a mistake, that's okay. You know, because we all do that. And I think, you know, trying to recognize that kind of human element to it is quite key. And I also think, to some extent, it's, you have to realize that actually this is difficult. Things are changing quite rapidly all the time in this space. It's kind of interesting. I always use the example of, like, probably 3 or 4 years ago, when you're talking about race, the phrase BAME was quite used all the time. So Black, African, and minority ethnic. That's a phrase that's now seen as, you know, not really truly representing that community. So it's a phrase that's kind of beginning to disappear a little bit. So I think we're all kind of trying to learn together with this. And I think, you know, hey, you've got Google in your pocket, so it's always worth asking a question, you know, can I say this, can I say that, you know. I think also sometimes, you know, just saying to people, look, you can ask. You know, one of the most common mistakes, it's a fairly trivial one, I know, but one of the most common mistakes I do is I use the phrase guys, meaning a gender neutral, like, you know, the whole team, whether it's women or men. Some people may not like that. And I think, so one of the simple things you can do is check with people, right? I'm going to, you know, a new team, you're just getting together. Is everyone okay if I use the term guys, meaning all of us in this room? If someone says, no, I'm a bit uncomfortable with it, that's fine, right? So maybe there's this question of encouraging people just to maybe ask a few questions, you know, just maybe check some of these things themselves. But in a way, I think ways in which we can kind of make it okay to make mistakes in a safe space, assuming that we're all kind of ready to kind of learn from that and try not to repeat them.
So being curious then.
Yeah, very much so.
The music and the mood and yeah, and different people's different thoughts on what's acceptable to some and others. And I suppose actually what's acceptable to some and not others takes me in a slightly different direction, but I'd probably like to come to you, Mark, on that. And that's, you know, we're talking a lot, you know, about inclusion, particularly around gender, but obviously inclusion goes much, much further than that. And there's clearly a lot of work to be done across other characteristics as well. And for me, it's not an either or. And I hear that actually quite often. It's like, oh, we've ticked this box, so we go into this box, where actually intersectionality goes right across everything, and you can solve all of these problems by doing certain things. So, but does your work take you in that space where you're looking at as intersectionality? Is that something that you guys see that? I've just done it as well, Gary. But is that
such a mistake?
I know. Is that something that you find yourself discussing more?
It is. And clearly, you know, a lot of our work starts with gender. And let's be clear, the two genders, men and women. And, you know, let's recognize, you know, there are other genders and there are people who identify in different ways. So we can't talk about gender as just two. But then there are, you know, there are a whole, you know, group of other diversity characteristics that we all recognize. And one of my concerns, if you like, is that diversity is just, you know, there's another box and another box and another box, and we categorize people and think about people through these boxes. And for a significant number of the needs for people within those boxes, it's actually, as you rightly say, there's a huge amounts of intersectionality. But at the end of the day, I think everybody wants to be understood and known as an individual, as a person. And I'm one of those. You know, I don't want you to go away from here and tick, oh, you know, he's dyslexic, he's da, da, da. I want you to go away and think, I've had a really great conversation with this guy called Mark. And a feeling that you've understood a little bit about me and my emotions and my ambitions and my desires. And isn't that what good leadership is about? It's understanding an individual rather than their diversity characteristics. And I would say inclusive leadership and inclusion will sweep up all of those diversity characteristics, and a good inclusion manager will understand you as a person. And that's where we should be getting to. That's where we should be moving towards, rather than characterizing and then counting, which is what diversity is doing. So big cheer for inclusion, I hope.
Thanks, Mark. It actually takes me on to one of our members' questions, but it sort of leads into the urn a bit, because one of the questions that we've had coming through is, why are there so many differences in women and men's views of the same issue? So that's something that obviously is a lived experience that one of our members has had. So maybe, Gary, I'll come to you first. We'll maybe I'll try and answer that question. What's your thoughts on that? So why are there so many differences in women and men's views of the same issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've touched on this in a couple of places, really, because I think men and women have been on a very different journey around this subject over the last, you know, 20, 30 years. And I do think most people, I think, kind of have this, I do think it's quite a deep-rooted sense of fair play kind of embedded in a lot of people. So I think, you know, if people think that things aren't fair across gender as one characteristic, then I think people kind of will want to do something about that. I think the interesting thing is men and women had a lot of very different messages around this over the last 30 years. And men, you know, as we earlier discussed, have either ignored it or in some cases kind of actually fought against it. And I think there is this narrative now that, that men potentially feel that they are losing out. So I think the journey we've been on has been quite different. I think we're all shaped by subtly different experiences. And actually, I think one of the challenges for us now is the fact that the way in which social media, the way in which artificial intelligence algorithms kind of, you know, reconfirm our biases, if you like, is making it even more challenging. And there's some interesting research, I don't know if you saw it, Joe, came out via the Financial Times a couple of weekends ago, just showing a very differing view of men and women from the millennial generation in terms of how conservative or how liberal their kind of leanings are, kind of both socially and politically. So I think it's in some ways we've got a greater challenge because I think that polarizing effect is kind of pushing men and women in quite different directions at the moment. Despite the fact, quite interestingly, that I think, you know, clearly, you know, men and women get together on, you know, both personally and socially and professionally and do great stuff together. So it's kind of interesting that we recognize, you know, the benefits of both of those kind of diverse lenses, yet there's kind of like, you know, social pressures that continue to try to drive us away. So in some ways it's not surprising because we're fed those messages. I mean, from a really early age, aren't we? We're kind of told girls be like this, you know, boys like this. I remember a story from a man who's really been into this subject, has been doing it for 30 years. And the first thing he said when he saw his newly born son is, "My, he's a big, strong boy." He's kind of setting the agenda for the first time he ever sees them. So I think it's difficult. We are trying to buck the machine and the machine's getting stronger in a way. So I don't know if that quite answers the question, but I'd be interested in your views as well.
Yeah, I suppose I'll maybe give you my own perspective on it. So I think, you know, at first when I seen the question, I bluntly said, well, it's because we're from different planets, because there's a whole book on that. That's why we have different views. But I think, I do think it's back to that whole lived experience, that it just depends. So regardless of your gender or whatever characteristics that you personally have that makes you you, then you're always going to have a different take from different than different people in the room. You even see that amongst your friend groups. You know, something can happen and everybody has a slightly different nuanced view of it, even if you've got similar upbringing and stuff like that. There's always different dimensions to it. So I just think it's a natural thing because it's to do with the fact that the way that we are raised and the experiences we have and the working environment. I did think it was quite interesting when you're talking about like the millennial generation, because I do even remember having a conversation with you know, with women who at the time were senior to me, maybe like 10 years ahead of me in their career. So would have been experienced in the working environment, you know, during the sort of late 70s and early 80s. I was going into 80s, 90s. And that was an interesting time to be a woman working in financial services. But the women that came before me are particularly in leadership levels, sort of thought, well, that's just how it was. You just sort of dealt with sexual harassment because it happened to everybody. And you just sort of had to get your head down and just go on with things and just realize that that was just something that happened to you. Whereas, thank heavens, we're now in an environment where people speak out, you know, and people are, it's not acceptable. And that's the way that things are. And thank heavens for that culture has changed. So it is interesting with even the generational aspects that regardless of gender, you know, you've got these different perceptions of the same thing. So I'm not even sure it's about gender. It's just, it's about your lived experience and how you came about that. But I'm interested in Mark's view on this question as well. So why do you think there's so many differences in men and women's views on the same issue?
Okay. In some ways, I object to the question. You're in both of your answers, you were talking about social conditioning and the journey that everybody's been on. And the journey that we've been on is to say men behave like this and women behave like that. Men think like this, women think like that. And that divides us. I think we shouldn't be talking about what divides us, but we should be talking about what we can do together. But also recognize that as men, and I've worked with Gary now for a number of years, Gary doesn't think like me and I don't think like Gary. We think completely differently, but we're both men. But we're both men. I don't like the question. I guess it's my short answer to that.
But our listeners are allowed to ask any questions.
Yes.
And this is about being comfortable with them. So if it made you feel uncomfortable, it's done its job.
Yeah.
just really conscious of time. We could talk all day about these topics, but fortunately we have another couple of podcasts to go around this topic. We've had more listener questions in, actually, particularly around inclusive leadership, managing teams and different cultures. And actually that's going to be the focus of our next webcast. So I'm going to close today's podcast with a huge thank you to Gary and Mark. And I hope that our listeners have learned something from our discussions and some of the challenges that you can face, but hopefully feel a little bit braver and have got some strategies to help them along the way in this journey, because it isn't easy, as I said at the start, but there is help out there. And there's lots of little things that we can do to make a difference. So look forward to speaking to you both in the next episode. And for today, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.